to the Titans Slippers Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Roger Kirby, and with me this evening, and welcome back, Mr. Stephen Rudkin.
Hello, Roger, and yes, episode 43. It's been a few weeks since we did one of these. We're just going to see where it goes, I think. But how are you doing? As it's now been just over 2 weeks since I was up your neck of the woods.
Yes, after you breaking my finger. With a fastball.
It was a Cam Newton-style fastball. Or it was more aptly, actually, more of a Manning-style wobble that didn't get there as early as you thought.
And, yeah, and I decided to catch it on the end of my finger and break it. So
yes, a mallet finger.
We're all good. But yeah, currently a bit grumpy and a little upset because I'm not allowed to play golf or exercise, but... as you've just heard, 20 minutes of me moaning and bitching about that, then we'll move on.
Yes, we'll keep the pre-show chat off the public airwaves. But
probably
both, both having a bit of a moan and a rant about life, but maybe that's just us being down about not having football for over 2 weeks since Super Bowl 50.
Yeah, I'm that first week I felt a bit empty, and I think I was trying to put my finger on, obviously, and I felt a bit like that after all of the kind of Super Bowls that I've watched, where I've really been, you know, since we've really been engrossed in the sport, and there's just that sort of emptiness. But I think this was particularly big in the sense that, you know, I think I've tried to articulate that to people on Twitter and various sort of email threads and stuff, that, you know, I really want it, Manning to win it, to, you know, because people in 15 years are not going to bother about how he won it necessarily. It's the fact that he got two rings. And sometimes I really just, you know, it's still to be determined whether he walks up into the sunset, but hopefully he does. I mean, it's very often that you get to see someone that you admired as a football player, as much as I did with him, potentially, you know, ride off into the sunset in that kind of fairy tale ending.
Yeah, that's exactly what you mean, fairy tale ending. It's all of it's kind of written nicely for him. And I think what the last few Super Bowls, they've, I don't know if it's just the late night factor here and we're so just trying to make it through watching the game. And sometimes that halftime show is just dragging, especially this year. And so the whole trying to stay awake and watching it over here in England makes some of these games feel like, like they almost flattered to deceive at times. And but I actually watched this game back about a week after it happened, and felt it was a better game second time around, bizarrely. Kind of knowing the storylines that unfolded and watching it second time around, I felt, from all accounts, the offenses weren't as bad as we almost thought they were first time around watching it, which was the way the game went, with obviously the defense winning it for the Broncos. But yeah, seemed a better watch second time.
Yeah, I mean, arguably the Panthers were just as good defensively as the Broncos in many respects, and it's just that seemingly the Broncos were able to run the ball a little bit better. Manning made a few important throws at important times, and he seemingly did that throughout the playoffs. I think of the one to Benny Fowler against the Steelers, being a particularly important one. But yeah, I mean,
yeah. I think you mentioned it there with the running. I mean, you just look back quickly at some of the numbers that we mentioned when we were talking about it a bit, that Stewart ran 12 times for 29 yards. Now, number one, that's not a very good return. But number two, Stewart only carrying the ball 12 times. Yes, he had a little bit of a niggle and missed a few plays. But and Whitaker and Tolbert took a few carries. But they're not the type of numbers that you should be using. And they almost went away from their game plan that kept them going so well during the season. Yet the Broncos on the other side stayed with CJ. Anderson, he got 23 carries for 90, and that type of performance paired with that defense was the game winner.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting that You know, you think of even the year before where the Patriots won it, and, you know, let's take away the fact that it was all the last play of the game and whether they should have handed the ball off to Lynch. But one of the big reasons that they were able to make that Super Bowl run, the Patriots, was the fact that they improved their defensive side of the ball so significantly. So it's going to be interesting to see, and especially with the draft coming up, where it seems like the defensive side of the ball is a lot stronger, whether people are going to start investing. And I'm not talking about elite or marquee type players, because I think you've got to be very, very careful to put all your money into, say, the one egg, say, with Ndamukong Suh. I think JJ Watt maybe is a slight difference in that. But you've got to be careful of playing all your, you know, the Bills are finding that out a little bit now, is that they've got so much talent up front, that, you know, and so much money tied up into that front, then there's an issue in terms of filling out the rest and more looking at depth. Depth is becoming more and more important in the NFL if you're going to make a run, because injuries are an accepted part and parcel of this now. We all, you know, everyone has some kind of major injury or stuff, but if you can, you know, able to rotate your players a little bit more so they're resting, not playing as many snaps. Again, if you can potentially run the ball so you run the clock, and also your players aren't out on that field as much. But again, if you lose a player and a man goes down, you can bring someone in of maybe, you know, of decent caliber and decent talent. I think you've got a chance. So
you can look at that. In just the two teams that made the Super Bowl, that the Broncos defense had good depth all around. That one of their main corners in Chris Harris had an injury and he was missing snaps, but they had Roby to come in as a really good quality replacement, and their whole front D-line linebackers were able to rotate when needed. And the Panthers especially, their front seven almost were very good at, they have got some nice depth there. People like Klein coming in to replace Davis and Kuechly if needed is a good linebacker, but they were probably just limited on their depth in the back end. Their secondary was a little bit short on depth, and they gave up a couple of plays, big ones even, to Manning over to Sanders. And but those two teams overall are good
and
depth.
even when they were able to make plays on the ball, nothing was ever picked off. It was either batted down. I remember one that Manning threw from the left, left the center to the right hashes. I think it was Norman that intercepted it, and he basically, if he'd have caught it, he'd have taken it back to the house. So there was a few kind of moments, but you know, I was pleased that Manning hopefully got to ride off into the sunset. So, do you think, with the information that's obviously out there about all the alleged improprieties that happened at Tennessee back in 1994-96, is going to have any bearing on his decision? Because March the 9th, where that salary becomes fully guaranteed, is looming.
Yeah, I think that is looming. The whole history, if he was going to retire and he's made his mind up about it, then potentially there's a reason why he's delaying a decision, because he doesn't really want to face all this music right now. But from a few things you hear around it, it's even occurring now with Megatron, with Johnson over in Detroit. You've not actually heard the official word. He's either just taking his time because they want to be sure about this. I mean, you don't want to jump into a rash decision. If he's genuinely in Manning, as he said, taking it week by week during the season, he's seeing how he's feeling. He's the type of guy that, to be honest, is going to take week upon week, and almost until OTAs start, is that type of time when he will feel like, or he wants to be ready, or doesn't know for sure whether he's leaving. You feel like he's a character that never wants to give up.
Yeah, and you think about that from our own perspectives. I mean, you were a cricketer, I was a, you know, soccer ball player, and I made countless attempts every time that I put it to bed and said, no, that's it, you know, time and the effort and the hard work needed to, you know, juggle playing semi-professionally and, you know, hold down a job isn't, and then...
I believe in the last 2 weeks I've still heard you say, I'm only, what, 18 weeks away from pre-season or something, and I could get into the best shape of my life and
and I am. I mean,
get back at it.
I'm in, you know, really, really good, decent shape at the moment. And we were talking, you know, with that strength thing behind me. And I don't think that need to compete ever goes away. You've just got to find something to replace it. So I completely get from that perspective. But I also agree with what you said, given the stuff that's out there. If he stands on the podium and says, this is it, you can guarantee that the first question will be completely unrelated to his retirement.
Unless he, I mean, there's only apparently three people who know the real true story, and whether if he actually genuinely doesn't have anything to hide or be ashamed of, and it was the simple mooning that it is potentially, that it's the case, then I guess that wouldn't stop him from facing it, because if the truth is there and it's the right truth for what he thinks it is, then I guess it's no problem.
But... And I'm guessing, given the fact that the case was settled and they probably signed big, fat, tidy, tight, no negotiation, no talk, no chat, disclaimers. The fact is, even if he stands up in front of it, it's going to be very much a case of, well, no comment.
Yeah.
No comment. I mean, no comment.
He's a pro at that. So I think, the question about the salary and the March 9th is, do you, as the Broncos, if you actually haven't heard from Peyton, he hasn't retired, are you cutting him at that stage? Because you can't that money.
I genuinely don't think they've got an option. They're saying all the right things, because, and I can't remember who said it, but they encapsulate it quite well, because they don't want to be the team that jettens the, franchise, the face of the league, arguably, over the last 20 years or so, and jettison him out to be replaced by Brock Osweiler, and all of a sudden he goes on and has success elsewhere, and maybe Brock Osweiler struggles. They need to almost allow Manning to kind of come to that on his own terms. But let's be honest, if you were in the Broncos' shoes right now, you'd be negotiating hard with Osweiler to make sure that you've got some team, friendly sort of deal that was maybe a sort of 5-year, $25 million guaranteed, with you an out after sort of 2 years sort of thing. But there's no way you can bring Manning back.
No. I mean, he's the type of player that if he was playing soccer ball over in this country, he would be the classic guy that would just move down a division, become a player coach, carry on playing if he generally wants to keep playing.
Yeah.
Wouldn't need to play at the Premier League level, but that's not the case in the NFL. You feel like there's been all the changes with coaches. There's all a number of quarterbacks that are hitting free agency or haven't been signed up by their teams. You feel like there's so much almost excitement and energy going into next year with a lot of teams and thoughts about new quarterbacks here, there, new systems. Yet none of them you feel are either going to suit Manning or he's got the physical abilities to carry on playing. And I think his physical abilities are probably what are going to stop him from going on anywhere and anybody paying enough money. But is a future Hall of Famer like him the type of guy who actually, I'll take 2-3 million to be a backup somewhere? Could you ever see that? You just don't know what his mentality and personality is.
I don't see that, but I guess I'm thinking that what else has he got left to prove? I mean, if he goes to a new place, it's going to be a new coach, new system, and you think about the teams that are going to arguably want quarterbacks, then none of those teams jump out at you and say they're going to make a run next year. Now, I know the NFL is very unpredictable, and it's a year, you can go worst to first and all the rest of it. That's how the draft and everything is set up. But I just can't see it. I just hope he doesn't. And I hope that he does it on his own terms and doesn't force the Broncos into making that call, because it will be made for him without a shadow of a doubt.
And seeing as he's got to up the ante and go one better than Jared Allen's retirement video, I can now imagine him just doing a Papa John's commercial, which is the announcement of his retirement. That'd be quite fitting.
Yeah, Peyton's not going to miss an opportunity to make a book, is he? So don't be surprised to see him on Oprah. What about the moving forward then? Obviously, sort of now looking at 2016, and we've got the draft upon us, and some of the cuts and free agency is sort of tentatively starting. Anything jump out on you? That is a phrase.
I mean, there's a few things that have happened, but they're kind of not jumping out. I'm intrigued by I'm actually still intrigued by the whole Calvin Johnson thing and whether he's actually going to retire and whether he's second thinking himself with a new GM, a new system. Is he just waiting to see what they do? But it's a bit of an odd situation because they can't do anything until he makes a decision. So he's almost inhibiting potential if he wants to see something happen with the team. I think not so much what's really happened. There's nothing too surprising with a few cuts here, there and everywhere. But I was out on a run on Monday evening. Just get that one in there.
Humble brag.
8 kilometres this time. Was it Sunday? It was Sunday. My apologies. Anyway, I was thinking randomly, and for some reason something popped into my head. There's just a few things I'm really excited about looking forward to next season. They're largely involving teams that are getting players back that have been missed the year, had bad injuries. And it's just those type of things that got me really excited looking forward. Things like Andrew Luck, he obviously played the whole season with what ended up being a horrific type injury internally. 100% fit Andrew Luck, being back to what he can do, is really exciting. Lev Bell being able to get fit and stay fit for a whole season again.
The Steelers as a whole look uber exciting on paper, especially if that defense was rounding nicely, and there was an argument that that back end was one of the worst in the NFL. So if they can make maybe bring back William Gay, somehow jettison Cortez Allen.
Yeah.
I knew that name was in there somewhere. I just couldn't quite articulate it. Then potentially, they are going to be in the mix, although the AFC North, is always a difficult division.
Yeah, especially because bizarrely of all things as well, something popped in my head. For some reason, I'm excited to see where the Ravens' offense goes in year two under Trestman. Obviously, Flacco got injured there at the end, but with Steve Smith coming back, with Perryman being able to actually make the field and play some games, and there are a couple of tight ends that they've got that are looking good in Gilmore and Williams moving forward. Bizarrely, it's the Ravens' offense that were getting me excited for some reason.
Well, the defense isn't going to get you excited because when you consider that Suggs is 34, Doomerville's 32, you've got, apart from that, you've got a back end that was obliterated last year. And, linebackers, okay, they bought in, I can't think of the kid's name that they bought in, one of the draft picks. But they haven't got exactly particularly notable names across there. They've got a bit of a problem because they've got an aging line, a back end that with no pieces that are particularly jumping out. I mean, you consider that for years it was Suggs, Lewis, Reed. And that's right down the sort of spine of your team, and it's going to be an interesting year for Harbaugh and the Ravens, because especially when you look at their cap as well, they haven't exactly got a lot of room knocking around.
Well, they've got to sort something out with Flacco, and that's the major issue there with their cap. But it was interesting, obviously, to see a little piece the other day about who has the least room to manoeuvre with their cap, and notoriously the usual suspects are at the top with the Cowboys, the Dolphins and the Saints, mismanaged that.
And I also think what was interesting was when you flip that around, so you'd assume that the teams with the worst cap, the better cap, the more cap space will be the better teams. But what you're actually tend to find out is that the teams that are actually pretty decent are the teams with the cap somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, they don't underspend and they don't overspend. And
yeah, because you look at the other side and it's the Ravens. Sorry, not the Ravens. It was the it was Oakland. It was Jags. It was teams that have almost had to go through 2 or 3 years of sorting themselves out, getting the cap sort of cleansed, from which to now make a push.
It shows up those just more traditional, more patient, more almost more experienced in a way franchises, people like the Steelers, the Niners, the teams that have got those, the history about them, that the way they manage it well and they're good year to year.
Yeah, and I think the Niners are an interesting one, man, because of the fact that last year was such an aberration in terms of, and I felt a bit for Tom Sula in the end because he was in a no-win situation when he lost so many players through sort of retiring and leaving in the door, and I you know, he didn't help himself, but I'm not expecting a magical turnaround. I think they're a 6-7 win team at best, and I think patience is going to be the key because Kelly's not exactly going to be the most personable guy in terms of a very, very feisty Bay Area, reportership base. And they're going to be looking for any holes or any perceived holes in that dynamic between Bulkey and Kelly. So I think it's very much watch the space. And in the division where I assume that the Seahawks are going to be back, and I think it's safe to assume that the Cardinals are going to be back. And I think the Rams are going to be, they're at least a team that's capable of winning 8 games at the very least this year.
7-9 again?
Potentially. But, you know, they are a competitive team. I think
they've essentially, if you look back over the last few years, they've actually won the division in terms of head-to-heads within there. So they're ultra-competitive.
They need to stop going to, across the other side of the country and laying an egg somewhere. And if they can tidy up that side, they potentially could be a force. But
just quickly staying on the Niners. Obviously, everyone's meeting in Indianapolis for the combine, and these last 2 days, it's like all the little nuggets and snippets you get out of all these presses and talks, and you start hearing things, and half of it is complete garbage. Half of it is just trying to either make somebody's trade value higher or maintain it, or it's all clever contract negotiations out in public, making people aware that they're either keeping this player or not.
It's all about somehow generating leverage out of nowhere, isn't it?
Yeah. But with that said, we've heard that Kaepernick is now firmly back in the plans that he always was, and Kelly's even said, yep, he's no doubt that he should be in our plans or whatever going forward. But then also people trying to join the dots together, and Vernon Adams may be your quarterback of the future, drafted from Oregon, who obviously can, he said he can run in and run Kelly's offense no problem at all. So
I think it's interesting. Watch this space. I would be very, very upset as a Niners fan if we were to draft a quarterback high, because I think we've got far too many issues and concerns elsewhere. And I think that if you can I always think you improve in the trenches first, and then you worry about the quarterback later, and especially given the fact that Kaepernick is on such a team-friendly number.
Yeah, it's $12 million this year. So.
Yeah, and a team-friendly deal. And, you know, Gabbert's, again, at a very sort of tidy number now. I'm yet to be convinced that
I think the only
he
way
can be the quarterback. Yeah. But, again, you know, they're two capable quarterbacks. And, you know, I still will go back on, you know, YouTube if I'm bored, and occasionally just watch some of the stuff and highlights from Kaepernick in those sort of that 12-month period where we went to, you know, a Super Bowl and a NFC title game. And, yeah, There's clearly a skill set there.
Yeah, I think that team-friendly deal. The only way you can really see him going is if he himself actually has no interest in being there and doesn't want to fit or do anything with Kelly and is adamant he wants to leave, then you could see further into the off-season, if that's the case and he's not playing ball, then maybe they ship him out, but that would be trade value at that point.
Yes,
but
I completely agree. It's trade, and I think there's no way that they cut him. I think it then backs them into a corner. I mean, you know, and even if they take a quarterback, where is the leverage?
So, watch
the space. What are your feelings that the top two guys will go? It seems to be that it's Goff and Wentz.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the NFL.com mock drafts, everybody's got Laramie Tunsil going number one to the Titans, and then most going Goff to the Browns, with Wentz maybe going there or certainly being the second QB taken off. But and all these mocks, in fact, have three quarterbacks in the first round. Now, Browns obviously have got to do something there.
Yeah, Browns are going to take one. I don't think there's an argument there. So I think it's a case of you pick your poison.
Yeah.
With that, I think the more interesting question is, where does the second QB come off?
Well, although a lot of mock drafts have still got the Cowboys taking a linebacker, there's even a quote online today from Garrett saying, we need to find Romo's replacement, he said. Now, the question is, when it comes to actual draft day and the buzz over the next few weeks, if Wentz and Goff aren't really talked about, the teams like the Cowboys, can they wait to the top of round two? Do they think the guy will be there?
I don't know. You had a fantastic tweet. And given the fact that Romo is embedded, and I completely get where you're coming from and completely agree, as a player, if the Cowboys went and took one of those quarterbacks at four, how would you feel?
Yeah. Well, that was, in fact, a retweet of Ross Tucker at Ross Tucker NFL. So, yeah. But thanks for the credit there.
No, I saw that tweet. It
was a retweet for myself, yeah. Ross Tucker saying, if I was on that team, I would really hate them picking a quarterback at four, particularly you've got Romo there. Yes, he's injury prone, but two, there are capable backups that you can get in free agency. There is, as I just said, one of these guys, you can get the top of round two when you're picking what would be 35th overall.
Yeah.
Surely one of the guys there. But then it's the big question of, you're picking fourth overall, you hope you're never that high again. It's easy to get the best quarterback out of this draft.
But they're not talking that those two guys are, you know, franchise-changing quarterbacks. So, you know, if you're going to draft and develop anyway, you might as, for me, and I'm not saying that I'm right, but you might as well try and pick someone up in the second and third and develop them from that.
I mean, just look at Tony Romo himself. He wasn't not exactly sure where he ended up getting drafted.
He was undrafted, wasn't he?
Yeah. So he's become their franchise quarterback, and he wasn't a first-round pick. A lot of guys who are. He's kind of probably 50-50, I guess, if you scan across the leagues, guys that either went first round or number one overall that are still embedded with a team at that franchise, and half of the guys aren't. And
I mean, I think for them, I'd like to see them, and I've only seen clips of the running back, Elliott, but he looks like a really, really decent player, and I think if they can have somebody, you know, to take the load off McFadden, who had a pretty solid season, and they can run the ball again, and they can then circle back around to try and get help on the D line, because obviously it's deep there, and whether they can find unearth a pass rusher, you know, somewhere maybe in the third or fourth, because that's definitely something that they're going to struggle with for all of Hardy's ills. And I think it's right that he was released, and hopefully the league blackballs him.
Yeah.
but I think that that was the formula. But they also need to help in terms of pass rush, especially now they've lost Randy Gregory, who, you know, and this is going to sound harsh, you know, an addiction is a cruel and difficult thing, but, you know...
The guy failed a test at the combine. Yeah. This is now his fourth test that he's had to fail.
Well, this is my argument, is that, you know, it's not a one and you're done policy thing with, you know, if you tested once in, you know, if you were an athlete,
yeah,
and you tested once,
that's it.
Yeah,
you know, 2 years been, or 5 years or 10 year ban.
This guy's been tested, has done it once at the combine, and then the Cowboys take, so he drops to the second round, costing himself an absolute shed load of money in the process. He then has tests again during the season, and then another three times, and you're just thinking, well, it's a foregone conclusion. He'll be, I guarantee, without a shadow of a doubt, he will be in on a year-long suspension. 10 games will be soon, and then he'll be on a year-long suspension, because I just don't, I outside looking in, and, you know, addiction is obviously a cruel affliction that a lot of people suffer with, but I don't know. I just have a really, really hard time when...
It's just seemingly more. There's guys that are coming out who have a track record, had a couple of issues, seemingly are repeat offenders again and again. There's very few that turn it around. You just look at Joseph Randall. He's now been arrested for the fifth time. It's kind of like the Manziel situation. He's just happening again and again. And you just think these teams are surely got to come to the point where they just say, if they've had any issue, any incident in the past, I don't care what talent he is, it's not worth it. Because of repeated risk and...
until the NFL community as a whole, so all 32 teams to come together and almost agree that with, you know, behind closed doors as an unwritten rule, you know, Trent Richardson's getting a tryout at the Ravens at the moment as we speak. So, you know, there's always going to be teams and coaches, and and Richardson's an odd case in the sense of he's not done anything wrong in terms of, you know, physical domestic abuse. But there's a guy that's been given countless opportunities that was drafted high by the Browns, traded for a first round pick by,
he's seemingly a nice guy who works hard, I guess, so people were happy to keep giving him a try.
It's just, you know, it's just crazy.
Who he's trying to ultimately replace there at the Ravens won't get a look in at all because of a video and one incident. But,
which is going to be interesting to see what happens with Manziel and McCoy, because there is video footage. Sort of lurking around out there.
And I was about to say as well earlier, my exciting things for this season was the fact that essentially the Jags, and they could go for another guy like maybe a Joey Bosa or a Miles Jack and get another linebacker or rusher and pair him with the fact they've really got two first rounders by having Fowler coming back after missing an entire year as a top pick last year.
There's a crazy video of him circulated. I've only read the report.
He's not technically involved, but he's not exactly innocent of, well, it's just a bad situation by all accounts. So you hope that's not something that's then going to ruin his start to his second season, because that could be something interesting to watch. He was with essentially a whole year getting ready for the NFL. He'll be guns blazing ready to go on all cylinders come week one this year. So that was going to be exciting, but who knows. Just quickly there, you touched on the Cowboys saying they could go running back. Interesting, a lot of the drafts were showing one, if maybe two, go in the first round. You almost think your logic there, maybe the Cowboys should wait to round two to get that running back if Elliott's really one, but the guy Henry Heisman winner. He is one of the more interesting candidates coming out of Alabama because he's got to dispel those myths that he's not Trent Richardson or Eddie Lacy and those guys who end up being overweight because he's a big guy. But so that's almost one of the things to super look forward to on the combine, is that all accounts he's going to run fast, and he's a big guy, but he's also quick and he can get the edge and go. So he, by all accounts, could be a running back available still at the top of round two, who the Titans should take, I guess, because my question to you was going to be exotic Smash Mouth in Tennessee. I think they need some good running backs to play exotic Smash Mouth.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be a foregone conclusion that unless a team falls in love with one of the two quarterbacks and wants to get ahead of the Browns,
yeah,
then realistically they're going to take the tackle from Omers.
Omers. Yeah.
So then it becomes a case of, well, where are they deficient? And obviously it's LeBeau's defense now, which I don't necessarily know is a good thing, but they have to find a way of complementing Mariota and not placing all of the pressure on him. I mean, Dorial Green-Beckham will hopefully blossom this year, and obviously he was a guy that's seemingly put his troubles behind him. There was no real time. I mean, I know he had difficulty in terms of picking up the playbook, but there didn't seem to be any of the major concerns with him. But again, I'm not convinced by the malarkey hire. I think there's issues there.
Not exactly exotic in that sense, the hire. So yeah, obviously tackle looking to go one. But we have the combine this week and then the draft in a couple of months. It should be a exciting period to this off season. Anything else you really want to touch on at this stage?
Yeah, just I think the last thing, and we I may have said it on Twitter, but just things that you're looking forward, not things you're looking forward to, but things you'd like to happen. If I mean, I'd like obviously the 49ers, and I think as a realist, I think if we can win, if we can get to 8-8, I think would be a solid start to Chip's tenure. So I don't think we're going to be challenging for the Super Bowl. So my sort of crazy narrative that I'm really kind of excited about is trying to dispel the Rodgers and the two Super Bowl rings, because the longer that goes on without the Packers getting another Super Bowl, that's going to be your new debate.
Yeah,
where does he fit in with the greats, given the fact that he's only got one ring?
Yeah, and he's in his 30s now. He's not a youngster anymore. I've actually got one of the other things that I was getting to about excited for 2016 would be the return of Jordy Nelson and seeing that offense. And I think, one, we like a narrative, but two, I really not like there to be a lot of the narratives out there. One, about Eddie Lacy and him being overweight. I would love to see him just come back in super lean down shape. He may genetically not be capable of getting too much leaner, but if he can come back and do what would be good for the team, combined with Nelson.
He must be able to lose at least 20 pounds, and even within his genetic makeup.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact that he was there better in year one, that combined with Nelson, combined with Rodgers, and the way they've now shaped that O-line, and they've been able to, with Nelson out of the game, integrate a few more of the other pass catchers, that offense should just be untouchable in 2016, so... But then it comes down to, can they get over that hurdle, get through the playoffs, and as you say, break that narrative that he's the best quarterback to only win one, now that Manning's gone on to two.
That's the concern, because he's as much as I've enjoyed watching Manning, I still think out of all of the quarterbacks I've watched recently, he would be my guy. If I had to pick one of them, he would be the guy that I'd turn to.
He's almost the most refreshing to watch, because he makes all the different throws, but he also has a good attitude and nature about him. He's obviously an ultimate competitor, but people like Brady can rub you up the wrong way, that he's too much, kind of almost far too partisan in the way that he's almost like a fan out there at times. Obviously, we've seen the two sides of Cam Newton this season, and Rodgers just seems like a guy and a personality as well that's kind of fun to watch as a fan. And he's one of those, yeah, should be going forward put into that all-time great conversation. But will he be somebody like almost like a Marino category? Or okay, he's got one, but to be honest, he's not really done all that much outside of the regular season. So I mean, if I've got a storyline that I really want to see happen,
Chargers staying in San Diego.
Would it be that? Yes, I would like them to stay there. Now that the Rams are in LA, I don't like the whole two teams in one city situation, like in New York, and therefore you're competing for fans. And if they can work something out down there in the more downtown area, as it's now being talked about, trying to get something where Comic-Con can be held annually, which is obviously a great convention that's important to the city. So get our priorities right, that we get a good venue for that first and then a stadium for a football team second. It's probably about the way the Chargers do things. But yeah, I'm just quite excited by the whole season overall. It's weird. I almost enjoy watching other games as much as I enjoy watching Chargers games, whether that doesn't make me much of a Chargers fan or whether it...
Yeah, but I think we've reached the stage of our lives, is what we've said, and I think that's the beauty of us now. You know, watching football, we're a lot more objective, and I'm not blinded completely by my 49ers fandom. I can watch the Seahawks and take a pleasure in the way that you know, Pete Carroll coaches and the way in which they go about their business. Now, I don't necessarily agree with some of the Legion of Boom antics and some of that, but you know, there are parts of it, and I think the way that they've allowed Russell Wilson to develop by having Marshawn Lynch in that running game has been a fantastic, interesting thing to watch. And I can watch that and enjoy it, as a purist, without sort of being shaded that, oh, well, I can't admit that I don't like anything Seahawks because it's the Seahawks. You know, I think that has been, for me, one of the best things about falling in love with the sport.
Your name isn't Rob Stats Guerrero of PFT Live, who is a blind partisan Niners fan when it comes to that division.
It's beautiful. When anything Russell Wilson, he just has a complete negative take on it. It's fantastic.
But yeah, purist is the word we like to use. But I think the other thing I'm really looking forward to is getting a fantasy football title in 2016. It's been a long year not having one. So I need to get back in the championship winning column next year.
One of us needs to.
I may just briefly mention that I did take down the playoff challenge for our group.
You've already told us that.
No.
Have you not?
We've not had one post-Super Bowl where it all hinged upon...
Oh, that's because you probably told me about five times.
Yes, there we go. I don't think I've told Anthony enough about my come-from-behind victory on the Super Bowl weekend with 320 points on that Sunday to leapfrog Anthony with my perfect picks of all Broncos and Panthers from week one. So took that challenge down with Anthony in second and... Paul coming up third, so well done to the Aussies. And, that was quite enjoyable to take that victory. Looking rather too smug here right now, so I'm glad you can't see that actually, because it's pretty. It's not very.
It's not attractive. It's not an attractive look.
So yeah, we're gonna. We've been having.
You're turning into Cam Newton on this. Everything's rosy, everything's great. Yeah. The moment there's a little adversity, and you know, You hate everybody. You won't talk to me. You won't accept my calls. You won't return my texts.
I don't get up from the podium and walk off though.
This is true.
At least if I'm going to do that, I would probably just say, sorry, I've had enough. I've answered enough questions. I'll talk to you later. What's wrong with just saying something nice about it rather than just getting up and walking off?
No, it was one of those. It was blown out of all proportions. Yeah. But the problem is it plays into everything that we spoke about on that podcast beforehand, which was it's all fine and dandy when you're winning and rosy, but can you still be that personality when the chips are down and use that as a positive thing to help drive your team? And when he's thrown himself on the floor, you know, in that sort of that tantrum when I think it was it. Did they drop an interception? I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was throwing himself on the floor, and there's just that, you know, he's not handing stuff to the crowd. You know, I think for me, if he was like that all the time, you know, when things were against him, I think I'd be fine. But I don't think you can't be up on cloud nine when things are going great for you, and when you know you struggle a little adversity, seeming you know. Dragging your feet and dragging your heels and the world's against you. You know, I think as a quarterback, you have to be a little bit more balanced. But
I will say, just in a mild defence of that, though, you watch the sound effects from the Super Bowl and you hear a few more things during the game, and he actually does at times try and encourage his teammates on the sideline. But yeah, what we see a lot is like you say, it's all great when they're winning, but not attractive and not
I'm thinking about that from my own perspective as well, and I've tried to take that when I into my working life.
Yeah.
And it's tough, don't get me wrong, but I've tried to not get too carried away when everything's seemingly going well, whether it's on a project or, you know, you're getting new jobs and stuff, and try and be a little bit more balance, because otherwise you're up and you're down and you're up and you're down, and it's just you can't live that way. So that's heavily shaded from my own personal perspective as well.
You did just mention it there about the handing of the balls, but as what I said recently, a lot of things both in football and in just life, it seems, with people, I'm finding out karma is becoming a more important thing. Like, you're reaping what you sow a lot in life, it seems. And that moment where Jonathan Stewart scores and he just takes the ball and keeps it for himself, Super Bowl or not, they give it away all season. You don't give it away at that point to a fan in the crowd. Selfish. So you can't have it all your own way, and you kind of bit them in the butt. So
I think you've creeped into our theology podcast there, so I think it's now a good time to finish.
Excellent stuff. We'll try and touch base with everybody throughout the course of this off season. Like this one, it's all going to be a bit kind of as and when we can, and
a little bit of life talk in there, you know.
Yes, indeed. So we
life talk with Kirby and Rudders.
Yeah, Kirby's corner and Rudders rants. So I'm sure you're all going to stay tuned for those nuggets and gems about live talk going forward.
I really, really hope to see that trending within the next 24 hours.
Speaking of trending, you can find us on social media, of course. I've had a few good likes and retweets this week on Twitter from some of the NFL analysts and broadcasters, so it's been a good week with my analytics, but I am at Stephen Rudkin. For yourself, it is at Roger M. Kirby for all your nuggets about golf, fitness, and all things Northern English.
Pies and all things pies and gravy.
Something like that. Actually, that's more Zach Goldman's thing on Twitter, giving us a tour seemingly of lower division soccer ball teams' pies that he goes and sees. But
yeah, Mac Town, my local club, used to do a mean chicken tikka pie. It was amazing.
I think I may have even had one of those when I ventured up to see the Silkman.
You even know what they're called.
Excellent stuff. We shall keep you informed via Twitter. This is the Pipe_Slippers podcast. Just quick housekeeping, sorry. Apologies to anyone who tried to go through our back catalogue earlier in the week as we did some site maintenance to our podcast library. So just to create a little bit more space to keep delivering you these great shows about life and football. And I think on that, we will see you next time.
I've been sipping a tea.